97.5 The Fanatic.
It is 801 97.5 The Fanatic. Devon Givens broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast, remembering Kobe Bryant. The 6 o'clock hour was brought to you by Family and Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com. South Jersey's diamond destination. And at 8:02, the 7 o'clock hour was brought to you by Club Risque, the Delaware Valley's premier gentlemen's club with 3 locations in Philly, Bristol, and Northeast Philadelphia. For more information, visit clubrisque.com. To my left, one of my brothers here with us tonight as we shared it until 10 o'clock. As we do often, JT, Joe Torti, what's up?
Tough couple days here, man.
Tough couple of days.
Has not been a fun experience, whether you're in the industry or not. It's been pretty brutal.
It has. And we will hear from Michael Bradley at 8:10, Donnie Carr after that, and Anthony Gilbert in the 9 o'clock hour. Joe, where were you yesterday when you first heard the news?
At Wegmans. I was, when I'm not working, I tune out completely, and I catch up on everything at night. That's just the way that I go. I'm shopping, and then my wife texted me, "Oh my God, Kobe Bryant." And I was like, "Come on, man, what did Kobe do now?"
Kobe Bryant, what?
Exactly. Yeah. So I, you know, first thing that you Google, bam. And then the rest of the afternoon just played out like a horror story, right? Because at first, you don't want to say that things like this come up all the time, but things like this come up often enough where you're like, really? Like, let me just like wait and see if this is real.
Absolutely.
And more people come out and confirm, and then more details come out about who else is on the helicopter and who else is affected, and you know, Gianna's there, and it seemed like every 25 minutes you were getting a new layer of crap news on top of the other crap sandwich that you already had taken in before. So it was really, really tough. Obviously, you know, your heart just breaks for Vanessa and the rest of the kids and the whole family. But man, oh man, what a brutal, brutal couple of days it's been.
Yep, really. And Joe and Pam Bryant here.
Yeah, of course.
His sisters. Uncle Chubby Cox.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
John Cox, his cousin, also played high school ball, collegiate ball.
It's a ton of people affected,
many people,
man,
affected, yeah, by this. Well, your first memory of Kobe Bryant, young Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. So not a lot of people know this. I wasn't born here. I arrived on this coast in 94.
Yep.
So like right before first grade pretty much for me. And by the time I got here, like, literally the kids, the second and third graders, are already talking about Kobe Bryant and what he's gonna be doing at the NBA level, and oh, you got to see this guy. Have you been around? Have you seen him rolling through? Have you ever seen him playing pickup? And it's just he was already, before he even reached the NBA, and you can speak to this, Steve, because you experienced it firsthand. Before he even reached the NBA, he was a legend. He was like a larger-than-life figure,
yeah,
even before. Now, the question was the local legend going to be able to expand? And nobody certainly envisioned what he became, you know, one of the top 3 or 4 players ever. I mean, it's a bananas story that happened right here in our backyard. So, really, it was fascinating for me as a kid from the West Coast to come over here and then watch a guy on the East Coast go and make a legend of himself back on the West Coast. It was kind of a fascinating thing to watch. But I knew more about Kobe by draft night, just from talking to everybody and everything else, than I knew about probably any other player in the draft, including Allen Iverson. So it was a really, really powerful motivator for every basketball fan in this area to say, hey, we've got this guy coming up that's going to be something special. So,
yeah, and some amazing ball players in that draft, which is why he was able to drop to 13,
mm-hmm,
where the Charlotte Hornets selected him, ultimately trading him to the Los Angeles Lakers for Vlade Divac. And you would also hear about the, you know, some of the other stuff with the Nets and things of that nature. And, yeah, man, just tough. So, Antoine, Dwayne, Maureen, Chris, Chuck, please hang on because our first guest has joined us tonight, and Joe Torti, Devon Givens with you, and we're going to, you know, speak to him for a few minutes. We're very appreciative of him sharing a few minutes with us. A guy that I got to witness play as well. He was a great basketball player here in the city, playing at Roman Catholic, at LaSalle University, and now the assistant coach at LaSalle University. And I had a chance to play in a charity game with him a few years back, and we became cool from that. And I wanted to reach out because I remember the battle that he and Kobe Bryant had some years ago. And joining us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline, that would be the great Donnie Carr. Donnie, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, man. An honor to be on the show, man. Thanks for having me.
Always, man. Appreciate it. Donnie, I wanted to reach out because we know how close you and Kobe Bryant were. So just wanted to get your thoughts on everything once you had the first heard the news.
Honestly, I was just devastated, man, and in a state of shock, pretty much like everybody else. Just thought it was false news, just didn't want to believe it, and just was deeply saddened about the news, man, and just thinking about, you know, his family, you know what I mean, who, you know, I got a chance to know Kobe and his family once they came back from Italy in 1992, so... You know, I knew his dad, Joe Bryant, who actually was an assistant coach at LaSalle and recruited me hard to come to LaSalle and was one of the main reasons why I went to LaSalle.
Mm-hmm.
Developed a great relationship with his dad, knew his mom, Pam, his sister, Sharia, and Shea, his first cousin, John. I was just, you know, really, really devastated and just thinking of his family and all the other victims and their families, man. It's just truly a tragedy and just a sad day. So it was just like, you know, it stopped me in my tracks. I just, you know, I was just was like shocked and numb and just in disbelief.
And can you take us back to, you know, when you did first see, they came back in 92, and who was Kobe Bryant when they returned from Italy in 92 as a basketball player?
Back then, I just thought Kobe was a bunch of hype, just because he was Joe Bryant's son. He was a really skinny kid, about 6'3", 6'4" at the time, that, you know, walked around with knee pads and elbow pads, and I was just like, you know, he's okay, but I don't see what all the hype was. To 2 years later, when he was, you know, entering his 11th grade year, being in all of them, and just saying, like, wow, did you see what that kid just did? You know, so, and just, you know, like I said, back then, Kobe was pretty much the same person he was in terms of his mentality. You know, he was uniquely different than all of the rest of us, who was just wanting to be teenagers and wanting to enjoy life. Kobe always had goals and aspirations of being the best player he could possibly be and the best player in the world. And he would do things that, you know, that we weren't even thinking about. And, you know, he just became a master at all his skills and gifts from God.
Donnie, as you watched his evolution, obviously you've seen a ton of players over the course of your time around the game. What was it about Kobe's development or mindset or whatever it was that set him apart from everybody else?
Well, I think that Kobe Bryant was the perfect basketball player. And the reason why I say that is because if you were trying to diagram the perfect basketball player, I mean, what would you want him to be? You would want him to have a basketball IQ. I think, you know, just growing up in the game of basketball, being around a professional player like his dad, who was an unbelievable talent, Kobe's basketball IQ was unmatched. If you look at his work ethic, you know, and will to be great, the best I've ever seen, unmatched. When you look at, you know, his heart, And his toughness, I mean, his mental toughness and his heart, unmatched. If you look at his talent level, his gifts from God, one of the best I've ever seen, unmatched. His skill set, unmatched. And his will to win and be great, coupled with his intangibles, I mean, what more could you want in a basketball player? He was the perfect basketball player. And I think that it's a rare combination. You see guys with, you know, great athleticism that just don't have the skill set or just the heart or toughness or the work ethic. I just think he had the rare combination of all of those things coupled in one, and that's why he's arguably one of the five greatest basketball players of all time.
Donnie Carr joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Joe Torti, Devon Givens with you. And Don, you just mentioned all that great stuff about Kobe, and you know the stories where you would hear Kobe's not from Philly, he's from the suburbs. As you pointed out, when he came back, you just thought it might have been hype at the very beginning. How much of it did he try to make sure he proved to other people that he did belong, and how was he accepted in the Philadelphia basketball community?
Well, that's just a bunch of crap. I mean, honestly, you know, his dad was from West Philly. You know, his whole family was, you know, throughout Philadelphia. They were all from Philadelphia. You know, his dad made it to the NBA, and he went and moved, you know, had to move to Europe because that's who was paying him. You know, that's what was paying the bills. So, you know, but, you know, Kobe played in the Sunny Hill League. He was always in Philly competing. His family was from Philly. And he was from Philadelphia. I mean, that's just nonsense. But I think that the thing about Kobe, you know, just knowing him, I didn't know the Black Mamba. You know, once Kobe became a basketball icon and one of the greatest player in the world, you know, he and I didn't talk much, but I knew Kobe being Bryant. You know, we would hang out at the Sunny Hill League. We would go eat. You know, he would call me on the phone, like 4th of July. We would meet up, hang out, you know, throughout our high school years. And I think that the thing that, you know, separated Kobe was that he always set challenges for himself. He was never content with, you know, like I remember, you know, us walking into the NBA camp, the first year of the NBA camp. At the time, he was the number three player in the country. And Tim Thomas was number one, and Lester Earl was number two. And they gave us all fans and pizza, and there was no TVs in the room because they wanted us to, you know, befriend each other and you know, meet and network and become friends. And Kobe walked in with me. He hugged me. He said, yo, man, you know, we both from Philly. You know, you my guy. I just don't want you to feel no type of way, but I'm not coming out of my room. I'm not coming out of my room until it's time to play. And I didn't know what he was doing in the room. I didn't know he was in there doing push-ups, sit-ups, meditating, whatever he was doing. But he said, I'm leaving this camp the number one player in the country because no one in the country is better than me, and I'm approving this camp. And that's what he said to me. And, you know, he didn't come out of his room until it was time to play. And his team won a championship. He won MVP. And he left NBA camp as the number one player in the country. Yeah. And that was Kobe Bryant.
And let's go back to this one too, Don. The memory of you and Kobe going head to head in 96.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about that game, you know, he and I had classic battles. You know, when he first moved back from Italy, and we were entering ninth grade, I was the number two player in Southeastern Pennsylvania in hoop school. He was number one. So that was where the rivalry started. He was number one, I was number two. And I just was looking like, what makes him better than me? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, at that time, again, he was tall, lanky. And he, you know, in basketball, the low man wins, you know. And I would always, in our younger years, I would get underneath him and dictate his movements and kind of like was able to defend him pretty good in ninth grade, you know, in the 10th grade. But, you know, his dad, you know, who was an NBA player, had great information. He was working out with personal trainers. So part of the reason why I was able to play against Kobe, because in my heart of hearts, I didn't think he was better than me at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we had a classic duel before that game. Roman Catholic played in the Plymouth-Whitemar Summer League along with Chester, along with Lower Marion and Plymouth-Whitemar and Chauvinham and a couple other suburban schools. So we would play Lower Marion a couple times a year in the Summer League. So the game that everybody missed but all the colleges saw was at Plymouth-Whitemar, where Kobe had just became the number one player in the country. And, you know, prior, that my junior year, we were top 10 in the country. We had Larry Kettner. Mm. We had Arthur Yard Davis. We had a young Rasul Butler. We had myself. Long story short, we had 8 Division I players on the same team. But, you know, we had finished that year, so coming back into the following year, we were projected to be the number 2 team in the country. So Arthur Davis was another top 40 player in the country along with myself. So we were on the same team. So Kobe knew that we were about to play, and he was number 1 in the country. So back then, you know, before AAU became what AAU was now today, all colleges came to high school games, you know, and to the Sunny Hill League. So back then, Coach K wanted Kobe. Rick Pitino was on him. He was at Kentucky. Coach K at Duke. Bobby Knight. Steve Fisher. All these people, the who's who of college basketball, was coming to the Summer League game. At the time, I didn't know. So Kobe called me. I'm on the phone. Back then, you didn't have caller ID. So I'm on the phone with my high school sweetheart. And, you know, the other line rings. So, I click over, and it's like, yo, what's up, man? What's up, Don? I'm like, I'm good, man. I'm chilling. Who's this? He's like, yo, it's Bean, man. It's Cole, man. What's up? Oh, nothing, Bean. I'm just chilling, man, on the line talking to my girl. Man, I'm just chilling out, man. Yo, I got a quick question for you. Is Arthur Yon Davis going to be at the game tomorrow? Now, mind you, Arthur Davis and Ronnie Conway was transferring to Frankfurt, but it hadn't been confirmed. So he wanted to know if y'all was coming. So immediately I knew he was fishing. So I'm like, I don't know. Wow, what's up? And Kobe, being vintage Kobe, because part of Kobe's thing was he knew no one was working harder than him. So he wanted to intimidate people before he even played against him. So, you know, it was going to be a big game for me because I was trying to prove myself as, you know, being – you know, one of the elite, you know, players in high school basketball at the time. Mm-hmm. He had already solidified that for himself. So he was like, you know, is y'all coming? I said, I don't know. He said, you know, because, you know, if y'all comes and it's you and y'all, then, you know, we can get it on. You know what I'm saying? You know, you two guys and it'd be me, then we'll probably get it on. But if it's just you, I don't even know if it's worth me coming to the game. You know what I'm saying? So I double take at the phone, and I just immediately slam the phone. Pretty much, he's going to destroy me if my friend, my best friend and running mate isn't at the game. She's like, calm down. I said, nah, man. I said, nah, man. Yeah. You know, I can't wait till tomorrow. But in his mind, he wanted to intimidate me.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? And at that game, long story short, first half of that game, I had 25. And I had told my assistant coach, who was our coach, our head coach, Dennis Sutton, who's a legendary coach in Philly and in Philly basketball history. He didn't coach us in the summer league. Our assistant coach, Jeff Stepp, coached us. So I had told Coach Stepp about the conversation Kobe and I had. So he's like, you know what, Donnie? I want you to guard Kobe because I know he's going to guard you because he's always creating challenges. He's going to guard you. I want you to guard him. I want you guys to go head-to-head because I want to show all these people that you're just as good as him. So in that game, I had 25 in the first half. He had 4. He had 32 in the second half, and I had 4. So he finished with 36 points, like 12 rebounds and 8 assists, and I finished with 29, 9, and 9. But in my opinion, that was even better than the game at Drexel. But, you know, they had beat us by 1. I fell to the floor, you know, distraught, like just, you know, in disbelief. Like, how did we lose that game? He came over to me, hugged me. Yo, man, it's just a basketball game. Don't worry about it, man. You know, I love competing against you. You bring the best out of me, man. You know we'll see each other again.
Yeah, that's great, man.
So, if John Lucas was the head coach at the Sixers, Kobe would work out with the Sixers.
Yep.
So that game in 95, December 95, Roman against Lord Marion, that was for all the marbles because, you know, that was, you know, going on record. And, you know, Roman had a great tradition, the best tradition in the state, in my opinion. And it was all about winning championships for us. So I just remember that game, just wanting to win. Like, I want to win this game. And not only do I want to win, I want to prove to people that I'm just as good, if not better than Kobe. And I want to play good. But I just remember having so much nervous energy because, you know, I knew Kobe. I knew he was going to bring his A game, and I just didn't want to be embarrassed by him. Like, where he comes out and dropped 40. Because people think, you know, the Black Mamba. Kobe was the Black Mamba in high school. He just hadn't mastered it yet.
Right.
You know, that guy would give you 50 in high school. You know what I mean? So, at the end of the day, I was just, you know, had so much nervous energy going into that game, and just remember wanting to do well. And, you know, I remember missing my first four shots, you know, in that game. And then, you know, hitting my first shot and, you know, settling down. And, you know, the rest is history, man.
Yeah. But it was a great one.
I was just blessed to be a small part of his legacy, man. And, you know, again, man, he was an unbelievable basketball player, but, you know, a great person, a great man. He was a born leader, a born motivator, and a guy that inspired millions, man. And it's truly a sad day, man.
And even with that, I have to ask you before we let you go, because you mentioned it and you said the sad day 2 years ago, almost to the date, your other very, very close friend Rasul Butler. And, you know, just tough and ironic how close, you know, the dates are.
Yeah, man. It's like, Kobe's a basketball icon. And again, I didn't know the Black Mamba, but I knew Kobe Bean Bryant. But Rasul was my brother. We always used to say, brother from another. You know, that's what we called each other. Like, Rasul had three sisters, and he didn't have a brother. So I was always the brother that he never had. And, you know, it's just amazing how, you know, the thing that I would say those guys had in common was work ethic. You know, Rasul was, the consummate pro. Wasn't an NBA All-Star or you know, a Hall of Famer, but if you had a Hall of Fame for work ethic, Rasul would have made it. You know what I'm saying? And you're talking about a guy that was in the NBA for, you know, 10 years and then got cut and then, you know, had the humility to go and play in the NBA Summer League, which was unheard of, and go to the G League, which was unheard of for a 10-year NBA veteran, and somehow willed his way, which don't happen because the NBA is a game of numbers. There's only 450 to 75 jobs in the NBA. So, you know, it's always guys behind you. So for him to get cut and be out of the league for a year and a half and then, you know, will his way back into the league just from pure work ethic and humility, being humble and hungry, was an amazing feat for Rasul, man. But, you know, it's just tragic how, you know, we keep losing, you know, Philadelphia legends and icons, you know, tragically. Like, Rasul died in a tragic accident with his girlfriend 2 years ago, which was, you know, on January 31st, 2018. And then Kobe died on January 26th in a tragic accident. And it's just amazing, man. Yeah. It's truly, and you know, Eddie Griffin, another legend, died in the tragic car accident. Hank Gathers died tragically. You know, Wilt Chamberlain died tragically. Another Philadelphia icon. And it's just like we're losing guys that have so much to give, you know, to the next generation of, you know, basketball players and people. And it's just truly sad, man. And
Well, listen, man, we thank you for taking some time out of, you know, a tough time for you. We really appreciate you sharing those memories, man. And we'll be talking to you soon.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. And just want to say, man, my heart goes out to all their families, and I'll just continue to pray for those guys. But thanks for having me. It was a pleasure and an honor.
Thanks, Donnie. Appreciate it as always, man. Thanks, Don.
All right, you got it.
Donnie Carr joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, 610-632-0975. Some great stories there. And Joe Torti, Devon Givens, we're with you until 10 o'clock. Michael Bradley will be next, and we'll get to you guys on the phones right here, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
A32, 97.5 The Fanatic. Dwayne, Dave, Maureen, and Chris, thanks so much for hanging on through Donnie Carr's interview. We really appreciate Donnie taking some time out and sharing some of that information. Of course, Joe Torti, Devon Givens, Connor Thomas producing the show. And we quickly go back to the Comcast Business Hotline and check in with our guy before we get to Dwayne, Dave, Maureen, and Chris. Michael Bradley, one of my good friends and co-worker of Joe Torti and I, and he's been covering, he had covered Kobe Bryant since high school, had some great information, and he wrote a great story today as well on the late, great Kobe Bryant and all that he has done for, you know, the game of basketball and certainly the game of basketball here. And he wrote the story in the main line today, so hopefully you guys get a chance to check it out. Michael Bradley joining us next on the Comcast Business Hotline. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, Mike.
What's happening, guys?
Hey, man, what's going on? Thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking some time, man.
My pleasure.
Well, we'll get right to it, man. First thoughts when you heard the news yesterday?
It was really shocking. I was actually visiting my mother, and my son texted me and said, you know, Kobe died. And I'm thinking, come on. So then I started looking around on my phone, and the first thing I found was TMZ, and I'm thinking, all right, TMZ, you know, they get some stuff right. But then it started to fall in with other sites, and it became clear that it was actually true. You know, it's always difficult when someone that young dies, and it's even more difficult when someone like his daughter is part of that and passes away at 13. You know, the family moving forward, you know, Vanessa Bryant with, you know, losing a child, it's incomprehensible. The basketball world losing someone who was such a major part of it for two full decades. I mean, think about that, 20 years. And, you know, I go back to thinking about interviewing him in 1995 when he was at Loma Marion High School. Even then, you sense that this was a guy who was really preparing himself for big things, and not just on the court, but to have a persona that was going to sort of transcend the game a little bit. He was so confident, he was so in control, and he was so clear in what he wanted to do. It was really impressive to see an 18-year-old like that.
Mike, one of the things for me, I mean, you're one of the better storytellers that I've experienced, and that was something that I kind of identified in Kobe right away. As soon as he was done and getting involved in the media and things like that, he really quickly found that niche of expanding the stories of basketball and things like that. What's your experience of him both in his playing career and afterwards, and what might he have accomplished here?
You know, it's interesting. The thing that people don't really realize about Kobe is this is a smart guy, okay? You know, he grew up in you know, for 5 years in Italy, learned to speak Italian, was exposed to culture in another country. He you know, Loma Marion High School is a very good high school, as you guys know. He did well there. He's always been extremely articulate, and more than anything else, he's been thoughtful. And yeah, look, like anybody who's been in the limelight, he's had his missteps, you know, with the media and with his image. But the thing that has always been interesting about him is that when he sits down to talk and when he really wants to be thoughtful, he can bring ideas and takes on things out that a lot of other people, whether they're athletes, whether they're coaches, maybe they're not willing to or they're not able to. he always wanted to do that, and that was, and that did two things. A, it illuminated the game and the person, but also it established him differently than other athletes who weren't so willing to tell their stories.
Mike, back when you were interviewing him in 95 while still at Lower Merion, of course, coming out in 96 in the NBA draft, what do you remember about him on the floor that separated him from everyone else?
He could do whatever he wanted. He was so much better. I mean, he was big. He could handle the ball. And let's think back to 95 and 96. You know, you had Magic Johnson who was handling the ball as a point guard who was 6'9", but you didn't see a lot of guys who were 6'5", 6'6", who could handle the ball like him, who could get where they wanted to get to on the floor. You know, that team he had at Lower Merion was not comprised of tremendous athletes. The guys could play the game, but he was really the whole thing there, and it was built so much around him. I don't blame Greg Downer for doing that. I mean, my goodness, he was once in a lifetime, 2,883 points as a prep player, including more than 1,000 as a senior year. As a senior, he could pretty much, you know, he could lock anybody down he wanted to. If you were going to stop him, you're going to have to run two or three guys at him. That's the only way to do it.
So many indelible moments, Mike, obviously, in his career. And one of the big ones that sticks out for me is the 81 points, obviously, is going to be one that goes for everybody. Do you remember watching that game, or at least hearing about it? Where were you, and what was your experience there?
I didn't watch it. I just remember hearing about it the next day. And, you know, it was something that you kind of expected from him, because you knew he was going to, at some point, go bananas and put up that many points. You know, the thing that's amazing about it is he's still 19 short of what Wilt did. And 81 points is remarkable. It's otherworldly. It hasn't been touched. You know, if somebody scores 60 now, it's considered something that is a complete outlier. So to go for 81 and shoot well while doing it. You know, it wasn't like he was, you know, 22 for 90 or something. It was amazing. So, yeah, I mean, he had tremendous individual performances. Once Shaq left and he was no longer the little brother to Shaq's big brother, which was sort of the narrative of those three championships they won together, Kobe was sort of a combination of got to get my own and then I want to get the team's. And he had some stretches where he was more about himself than about winning. Clearly, but if you take his career in total with the five championships and the All-Star game appearances and the you know, 33,000 plus points, it really is a tremendously complete performance.
Michael Bradley joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Joe Torre, Devon Givens. And what kind of mark, Mike, having seen him from starting at Lower Merion and all the way up to his final game against the Utah Jazz, dropping 60 in that final game, what mark does he leave on today's game or on the game in overall?
Michael Jordan was, you know, the reputation as the consummate competitor, okay? Won the six championships, would knock anybody down to win a game, didn't care. It was all about that. Kobe was more of the modern kind of player whose personality and persona had to be, you know, sort of crafted over a long period of time in a lot of different ways. I mean, he gave himself his own nickname, right? Usually people get nicknames from somebody else. Mm-hmm. He's the one who came up with the Black Mamba. He was very conscious of where he stood in the not just the basketball world, but the sporting world. He was one of those guys whose, you know, his name was unique. I think if his name was Bob, it would be a little different. But Kobe, you didn't have to say anything else. Nobody called him.
Or Bean.
Yeah, right. A middle name of Bean, because his father's nickname was Jelly Bean. And people forget, you know, if you're of a certain age in Philadelphia, you remember Joe Bryant as a killer in high school and college. I mean, when he was at LaSalle, I remember they were playing Penn one time, and he untucked his shirt, and I don't know if it was Al Meltzer doing the game or who was doing it, but it was like, uh-oh, he means business now. And Joe Bryant at 6'8", 6'9", could do a lot of things his son could. He could put the ball on the floor. He could shoot from distance. So Kobe was somebody from the very beginning. I mean, the fact that he agitated to get the trade to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Okay? That showed he was very conscious of where he wanted to be and what location would allow him to be as big as he possibly could be.
Well, listen, man, we appreciate you taking some time, man, and go read The Main Line today, where Mike wrote a great piece on Kobe Bryant, dating all the way back to the first time Mike met him at Lower Merion High School in 95. How about that? What was he, a junior, right, Mike?
No, he was a senior. It was the 95.
Oh, he was going 95,
early
96.
In the 95-96 season. They started that year 1-3, and
so you,
they won the state title.
So you did you go to the game where they played Rip Hamilton in Coatesville?
I did not go to that one. I was at the St. Anthony's game. They actually lost that game, and I was the one against Donnie Carr, and I know you just had Donnie on, and that was a tremendous showdown. You know, you talk about two great Philadelphia players going at it. It was just that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Donnie talked about how Kobe had 4 points in the first half while Donnie had 25, and then Kobe in the second half erupted for 32 while Donnie had four. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of stuff can happen.
Well, Mike, thanks so much, man, for sharing and sharing those memories and some of your time, man. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon, man. Always good to catch up.
Always my pleasure, guys. Take it easy.
Thank
thanks,
you, Mike.
Mike.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Michael Bradley, Dwayne, Dave, and Maureen, you guys, and Chris as well. You're first when we get back. We thank our guests, Donnie Carr and Michael Bradley. We come to you, 610-632-0975. Joe Torti, Devon Givens, remembering Kobe Bryant right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
847, 97.5 The Fanatic. Joe Torti, Devon Givens, remembering Kobe Bryant here tonight after the news came down yesterday, Sunday morning, about the helicopter. And as Michael Bradley said, and Donnie Carr, none of us wanted to believe it. You had to do the double take and the double check. And same for Joe Torti when he got the message from his wife. What are you talking about? What did he do?
Yeah, well, he alluded to it, too. The problem is TMZ used to be wrong all the damn time. Now they're never wrong,
man.
And they're always first. Like, that's the problem. So when you see that it's TMZ, you're like, man.
Do you have a problem with them being first the way that it came out due to the fact that his family did not know?
No, I really don't have a problem with that because I don't know what the responsibility is. Like, if it's Fox or ABC or are they supposed to try to contact the family first before they break a story? And the time that they do that, somebody who doesn't have those scruples might already be putting it out. I don't really have a problem with it. I think it's tough sometimes the way that these places get their information. I think that it's kind of gross sometimes, but no, I didn't really have a problem with it.
Gross a lot of times.
Yeah, it's gross a lot of times.
Gross a lot of times, yeah. And I did have a problem. I don't know how they could have handled it, and you're right. I mean, but are you going to get cool points for breaking the Kobe Bryant story, though? You know, something like this? This is not a cool points story.
Right, exactly. There's no winning this.
No, there's no win here, so it would have been nice if family was able to find out the proper way versus social media. And I only say that because we talk about Gianna, the 13-year-old. They have an older daughter who's 17,
mm-hmm.
Natalia, right? So what do most 17-year-olds do when they wake up, the first thing they do?
Checking the phone.
So if you check your phone, is that the way you want her to find out?
Exactly. To be fair, the tragedy is the event. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like, and I'm not defending it, but, you know, what's the best way?
There is no best way.
You know, what's the best way to hear?
Yeah.
The tragedies that it happened. That's what the brutal part is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
610-632-0975. Let's go to Dwayne. It is tough. Dwayne in Coatesville. Thanks so much, Dwayne, for hanging on. You're on 97.5.
Hey, how y'all guys doing tonight?
Hey, Dwayne.
First of all, I want to give out my condolences to everybody that was involved. So sad to hear. You know, I still can't believe it happened. You know, I grew up in Chester. So my first recollection of Kobe, I was a freshman in high school, and I believe it was 96. And I had a friend of mine who was in 12th grade, and all he kept talking about was Kobe. Kobe, Kobe, Kobe. And that's all he talked about, man. Yo, you got to see this guy play. You got to see this guy play. So, well, back then, Chester, we had good basketball teams.
Mm-hmm.
So So I remember going down to the Palestra. You know, we all went down there, and we watched him play. And man, he went through us like butter. And we were just sitting there like at all. I was like, yo, he's really good, because, you know, back then, you know, like I said, we all had good basketball programs back then. So I remember going back down to the Palestra when he played Rip, because right then and there, we heard about him going to the prom with Brandy. Brandy's supposed to go to prom. We started looking up to him. Mm-hmm. We was looking up to him, man. We was like, yo, we got to see him go play. So we went down to Palestra when he played Rip. Now, I didn't know Rip at the particular time, because I live in Coastville now. But back then, you know, we were just going down there to see Kobe play, because he just beat us. So we was like, yo, we hear Brandy's supposed to come. So we thinking we going to see a celebrity and whatnot. And hold and be told, I never seen a building with so many people in it. So many lights, so many cameras, the college coaches. And, you know, I'm in ninth grade. We just having a good time. We having a good time, man. And that was the first time I seen Kobe Bryant. You know, I was the first time, you know, just growing up in Chester. You know, he was like, we was wanted to follow him. We wanted to be wherever he was at. We wanted to be around him. So I ended up moving to Coastville when I was 18. So in 06, Rip brought Kobe up to Coastville. You know, Rip has a summer league up here.
Yep.
Once a year, he'll come back. He has a summer league up there. He brought him in with 06. Now, I'm thinking, you know, Kobe going to have an escort. Nah, Kobe walked right in the crowd. You know, he walked right in the crowd, shaking everybody's hand, signing autographs. He sat right there on the bench, watched the games play, you know, and I'm just like, wow, he's a cool dude. And I'm just remembering back in 96 when I first got to see him. I said, yo, he was a cool dude. So up here, you know, Rip is God up Coastville.
Yes.
So, you know, they bring up all the stories about the time with him and Kobe played at the Palestra. And mind you, I was in Chester, so I seen it, but I didn't know I moved to Coastville and that.
Yeah, you didn't know the impact of what it was for their area. Sure.
Right. So, you know, to this day, you know, when Kobe passed away yesterday, you know, everybody in that area where Rip grew up at, the age group, of Kobe's age group, they will bring up videos. They will bring up memorabilia of that night. And I'm like, wow, I was there. But I was there on a whole different vibe, because we was following Kobe, because, again, he was bringing Brandy up. But back then, Brandy was
on fire at that time.
She was on fire at that time. Yeah. But he just beat us. You know, and it's just sad to hear, man. And, you know,
I'm
happy that I got the chance to sing.
Glad you had the chance to
see him. Did sing in 06. You know, I didn't get a chance to take a picture, but, you know, there's to watch the young kids.
You remember. That's what is important, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate you sharing that. I definitely remember. And again, I was saying that, Joe, myself, that I remember at that time and just knowing everything about Kobe at that point and Brandy on the prom, that was real.
Like,
yo, he is it.
Shoot a shot. Get the shot. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's Kobe Bryant. Listen, guys, we got 25 minutes commercial free on the other side. So, Maureen, we want to give you all your time. Dave, Chris as well. And anybody else who wants to jump in who dropped off during the interview, 610-632-0975. This is Joe Torti. I'm Devon Givens. We're remembering Kobe Bryant tonight right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.